Back together again, you and I, on a Friday, November 11th, Veterans Day 2022, on Connecticut Today. We spoke with Journal Inquirer of Manchester columnist Chris Powell regarding the Tuesday election results. We also welcomed Anthony E. G., author of People Over Politics. One of our go-to people here on all things Connecticut. And hey, why not have him in today? Because the dust has settled and absolutely nothing has changed after the elections. Chris Powell's with us. Chris, a lot of money spent on nothing. The will of the people is fine, but meet the new boss, same as the old boss, huh?
Well, I think the satirical publication, the Borowitz Report, did a commentary purporting to interview foreigners who were amazed that the United States must be such a great country because it spent billions and billions of dollars to change absolutely nothing.
Hey, it's true, Chris, because not even here in Connecticut, but, you know, I understand the red wave never happened, so Democrats look at that as some sort of pyrrhic victory here. But, you know, to watch some of the cable coverage, everybody's high-fiving each other. Well, you still lost the House, and you may lose the Senate, and I know it is. I understand what it is, but, you know, sometimes, Chris, I look up there in you two in your capacity having to write about this stuff, and you just have to laugh. You really do.
Yeah, but, you know, for a midterm election here, this has got to be considered a triumph for the Democrats. Usually the party in power loses substantially in a midterm election, and there will be very little change. Now, yeah, the Republicans will have the House, but as a total number of seats that usually change, this is tiny. I mean, I look at this as a catastrophe for the Republicans nationally, and the only silver lining here is that, you know, maybe it'll make them think that Donald Trump is not going to be a good future for the Republican Party.
Which is maybe why now, Chris, the Democrats will beg Merrick Garland to indict him on something, saying that, oh no, the Republicans may have finally wised up. We got to keep him around on something.
Yeah, I'm not sure that the indictment thing would be disposing of Trump, because, look, his base is such that when he was campaigning for 2016, I guess he went to Iowa and he had a very profound observation. He said he could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and he wouldn't lose any voters. And he has a core support that doesn't care. Indict him, convict him for genocide. They're going to follow him to the end. It's just not going to be enough people that can win an election.
Chris Powell here from the Journal Inquirer of Manchester. Chris, it's interesting because I see these numbers that the vote totals in the cities were actually several thousand less than last time. And Governor Lamont, to his credit, really gained tractions and flipped a lot of suburban towns. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was watching it on election night, and I knew it was over when I saw Weston come in, and Weston voted for Lamont. And if a Republican candidate for governor can't carry Weston, he's not going to win. But this has been a trend in Fairfield County for a long time. It's more and more Democratic and less Republican. I mean, when I was growing up, Weston was the most conservative town in the state. I remember when John Lupton was a state senator from Weston, he was the Barry Goldwater of his time in Connecticut, and now Weston is voting for Ned Lamont for governor. Now that this is a big change, and it's I don't attribute it to any fault on Stefanowski's part. In fact, I thought he ran a pretty good campaign. He was very specific about a lot of issues. He was very very visible, and he lost by three or four times the vote he lost by 4 years ago when he really had nothing to say except, gee, it would be nice to repeal the income tax. So I'm very reluctant to blame him. And this underperformance for Republicans was a national trend in the election on Tuesday. I don't think we need to look too much farther beyond that to explain what happened in Connecticut. I know people are you know, saying, oh, the Republicans don't have any solutions in Connecticut. They complain but don't have solutions. Well, where are the Democratic solutions? Nobody has any solutions in Connecticut. That doesn't keep the Democrats from winning elections. I think what happened in Connecticut was mainly a product of what was happening nationally. I would like to rerun that election, minus Trump, minus the abortion hysteria, and I think it would be a good deal different.
Yeah, and I read the same comment you did, Chris, regarding, well, the Republicans don't have any solutions. Well, no, they do. But the problem is, if they're budgetary solutions, they're never heard in Hartford. I explain to people, literally, there are no Republicans in the room. And I explain to people that if Republicans have some good bills, it makes sense. The committee, they're never even brought up for a vote, Chris. So you're right. All this nonsense about, well, there are no Republican ideas. Well, in the guise of the leadership in Hartford, yeah, I guess there aren't, because they never want to look at them.
Yeah, there's another thing happening here that I don't think has gotten much attention. First, it's the spending in the campaign. And the governor seems to have spent at least double what Stefanowski spent. And, they're both rich by my standards.
Yeah.
Lamont is rich by cosmic standards. I mean, Bob had to work for his money. The governor was born with a number of silver and gold spoons in his mouth. But and look, I wish I was, too. You can't fault
him. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that, Chris. I'm glad you admitted it. That's good.
Yeah, well, look, so the governor spent at least twice what Stefanowski spent. Secondly, I have never seen a governor during an election campaign distribute so much financial state patronage as I saw Lamont do. I mean, every day, practically, he was around the state announcing, some new program or some new award for some new facility in this town or that town. The state sent out hundreds of thousands of checks as a supplemental payment on the earned income tax credit program. I mean, the money was falling from the sky. When John Rowland did this a decade ago, or longer than that, the Democrats, said he was bribing voters. I mean, when Ned Lamont does it, it's a Democratic program. And, those things got to have had some impact. But I think on the whole, this is probably more Trump on abortion than it is anything else, because the same thing happened in all across the country. The Republicans underperformed, and if they underperformed worse in Connecticut, it's because Connecticut's an overwhelmingly Democratic state.
Yeah. Chris Powell, though, something I've been musing about here on the past couple of days, knowing I was going to have you on, I want to ask you about that. You wonder, Chris, or at least I do, I love these alternative history things you can watch on, streaming channels and all that. Chris, you wonder, what would have happened if 4 years ago, Bob Stefanowski was not able to gong Mark Boughton in the primary? And, you had Boughton here, a former legislator, former teacher, moderate guy, mayor of a pretty successful city, and you were coming off of 8 years of an utterly, in every way, unlikable governor in Dan Malloy. And, you wonder, Chris, if Republican voters in that primary, because I know they were upset with some of the stuff Boughton did with guns and abortion and stuff like this, you wonder if they blew a golden opportunity there. Now, Lamont still may have beaten him, but I've kind of been musing that around over the past few days.
Yeah, no, I was listening to you a half hour ago about this. I think it's something else. Look, Mark Boughton, I have the highest regard for. He was mayor of Danbury forever, Republican mayor in a Democratic town. He did a great job. He was almost universally admired. But he ran a dull campaign in the Republican primary 4 years ago. He had nothing to say in that primary, while Stefanowski did have something to say. He wanted to repeal the income tax, which, unrealistic as that was, it was something to say. And you're missing something, and that is, 4 years ago, it was a five-way Republican primary.
That's right. I looked at that today.
For governor. Stefanowski, who won it with only 29% of the vote, which was a powerful reason why we need ranked choice voting in Connecticut. If we'd had ranked choice voting in Connecticut in that primary 4 years ago, maybe Boughton would have won it. Maybe he wouldn't have won it. I don't know. But Stefanowski went into the general election campaign 4 years ago, having come out of the Republican primary with only 29% of the vote. Boughton was a bore, and the four other candidates just split the vote and deprived the party of coming into the general election campaign with unity.
So you like the idea, Chris, of ranked choice voting? Are you for that?
I'm inclined to favor it, Paul, just because I can cite for you so many incidents in Connecticut where we had elections where a candidate won with less than 50% of the vote, and that Republican primary 4 years ago was one of them. Look, John Rowland was elected with less than 50% of the vote. Lowell Weicker was elected governor with less than 50% of the vote. Connecticut is a powerful argument for ranked choice voting.
Interesting. Chris Powell, as usual, great stuff. Chris, thank you. We appreciate it. Check out his columns, folks, at the Journal Inquirer of Manchester. Chris, be good. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll chat. Take care.
Thanks very much.
Do we agree on a lot of things more than people think? Name of the book, People Over Politics, a nonpartisan analysis of the issues that matter most. Our author and guest here has over 20 years of experience as an investment professional, attorney, corporate board member, and officer in the Army Reserve. He's lived in large urban areas, small rural towns, and abroad. He's also been a candidate for U.S. Congress. Again, People Over Politics, a nonpartisan analysis of the issues that matter most. Anthony G. is the guest. Anthony, hi. It's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon, and how are you?
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Paul. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I'm reading parts of this book here. Anthony, this makes eminent sense, but let's step back here from the beginning. Are we really as partisanly divided as people make it out to be on certain issues, or do you think maybe that's exaggerated? What are your overall thoughts on the book and what our state of partisan like or dislike is today?
Sure. So there's no doubt that there are certain issues that are more divisive than others. But, you know, ultimately, I believe that, you know, the what sells in the news represents kind of the forest 10% on the left and the right. And ultimately, the 80% in the middle oftentimes get drowned out in areas where we may potentially have some level of agreement in terms of principle. We may differ in terms of tactics and the like. But ultimately, I think Americans want what's best for our country.
You know, Anthony, it's funny you mentioned what you said right now, not in a comic way, but you and I have never met yet. When people heard what you just said, they may have smiled because I have on this show, Anthony, what I call, in fact, the 10-80-10 rule. Now, I can't copyright it because you just said it, so I won't. But Anthony, bless you for saying that. I always say 75-80% of the people, Anthony, you sit down at a diner, at a coffee table, or whatever, and I think we'd agree on how to fix stuff. There's the 10% nuts on the left and the 10% nuts on the right, and they take up all the air in the room, don't they?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you take any issue and put it on the table. The real question becomes why, right? What's the motivation behind some of the divisiveness? In some cases, you know, maybe it's people truly, truly believe, right, in some of their views. In some cases, it could be because there's a business model behind it. In either case, I think it's incredibly destructive and not healthy for our country.
And you mentioned that business model, and I have that thought often, Anthony. You know, if a certain cadre of politician kind of backs off and sees a different thing vis-a-vis abortion or gun control or the border, suddenly, Anthony, the loud base doesn't donate money to them or the party anymore.
Well, and I think that's one of the biggest problems when you look at all the money that is in politics. And don't get me wrong. Listen, we live in a capitalist society. This is America, and we need money for everything. But when the dollars that are supporting you tend to drive your views rather than the other way around, I think that's when we have a problem. So what happens is we oftentimes will have politicians that will cater to their base. Right. And of course, I mean, in this case, I mean, the base that's funding them as opposed to truly pushing forward an agenda that's good for our country. I heard a great quote recently where someone said, you know what? We have incredibly shrewd politicians today, but not enough leaders, right? When we get back to the point where we have leaders, they'll just do the right thing, period, irrespective of what those dollars say that's supporting them for their particular seat in office.
How divided are we? Name of the book is People Over Politics, an nonpartisan analysis of the issues that matter most. It came out a few weeks ago in hardcover. Pick it up anywhere you get your books, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and all that. The author, Anthony G., joins us. There's a quote here cited on the info for this book. Folks, listen to this. Political parties are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp themselves from the reins of government. That, according to a guy named George Washington, you may have heard of him. Anthony G., the first president, seemed to be pretty prophetic there, did he not?
Incredibly so. And as an additional quote, he said that, quote unquote, "I was no party man myself. And the first wish of my heart was, if parties did exist, to reconcile them." Right. And I think what he was getting there ultimately is this principle of understanding the art of compromise and an understanding that no one party can have a patent on good ideas. Ultimately, in my view, what real leadership looks like is being able to pull the best from both sides of the aisle in order to move our country forward. And I think ultimately that's what President Washington would wish for.
What do you think, and what do you outline in the book, Anthony G., in your book, People Over Politics? What do you outline as, let's say, the two or three major issues, do you think, that are really tearing the country apart now?
Yeah, no, I mean, certainly, first and foremost is the economy, of course, right? And the economy is so massive and broad and has so many issues that are inextricably linked. It's hard not to start there, right? When you think about energy, and specifically, should we be transitioning to a green economy at this point, given some people's concerns about the climate? That is certainly a divisive issue, one that's certainly in the news most recently since the summertime is, of course, abortion. That is another one. And then I'd say immigration. Those three issues would be near the top of the list, and I think they were certainly near the top of the list when you look at the issues that were important to people leading into the most recent election.
And Anthony, you know, I've always thought on this show, I say, folks, there are different issues, but you can take the issue and separate it as to how politically it's manipulated every day. And I've always contrasted, as you say, abortion, and on the other side, guns. You know, male versus female, country versus city, liberal versus conservative. And they are really different issues, Anthony, but the thing I think that locks them together on the political spectrum is one side looks at each issue as their ultimate expression of freedom. My freedom to get a gun, I'm a law-abiding citizen, right? Or my freedom to access an abortion. So as different nuts and bolts as these things tend to be, Anthony, they are kind of all rooted in the same politics.
They are. And then, you know, you take abortion, just because I know that's a really, really hot and divisive topic that sometimes people are afraid to speak on. And in this particular case, for me, I look at abortion as one of those areas where, quite frankly, you took a deep dive across the country, there's more commonality than you would think than exists in the news. Mm-hmm. So we talk about that 10% on the left and the right. Right on the furthest to the right, there should be no abortions whatsoever under any circumstances. You go further to the left, you can have an abortion under any circumstances whenever you feel like it. It's your body, your choice, whenever you feel, right? But then in the middle, that 80% is much more practical. You know, you'll find that they say, listen, we understand that women have rights and they should be entitled to certain rights. Where the disagreement comes into place is how far along into a pregnancy is an abortion acceptable and who should pay for it, right? Those are the issues that if we focus on those types of things, maybe we can find more common ground rather than a zero-sum game.
And yet, Anthony G., you know, you talk about the economics of this whole thing, and if you have certain lawmakers, here's a good contrast. I think if you have a Democratic lawmaker, right, who says, you know, we need to have a few more limits on abortion, right, NARAL, they're going to go after that guy or gal and say, well, guess what? We're going to fund your opponent because we don't like that. And then on the opposite end, if you have a conservative, Anthony, who says, yeah, you know what? I'm a gun owner. I'm a hunter. I have a handgun, but we got to clamp down on this. Well, the NRA is going to whisper in his ear, you wouldn't want us to write a big fat check to your opponent in the primary now, would you? So there's your economics argument.
Right. And to that point, you know, one of my favorite quotes is, we don't have a government by the majority. We have a government by the majority who participate. So, you know, those of us who are on the ground, right, we have the ability not only to vote for certain officials that we want in office and vote out those who we want, but we also can make a decision to support or not support certain businesses who are funding certain issues, mm-hmm. right? So we have more power than we realize as a collective.
Anthony, thank you. It's been fascinating, and good luck with the book, folks. Pick up the book, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Google it online. People Over Politics, a nonpartisan analysis of the issues that matter most. I got a digital copy of it, been reading sections of it. Very well done. Author Anthony G, G-H-E-E. Anthony, thank you. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and hopefully we can chat down the road. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Paul, and continue to educate the masses. We really appreciate it.